Welcome to APHA's Advocacy Training for Leaders. I'm really excited to get this panel started. This will be a very good interactive panel that includes APHA staff-led presentations to discuss advocacy tools and resources that are available to APHA members. There will also be an APHA member and affiliate leaders coming for the second panel to discuss their advocacy success stories that will be great to learn from. And then the third panel will discuss the advocacy experts. They'll describe what tools they have, any concrete examples of how to take action. So to get started today, we have Don Hoppert. He is the Director of Government Relations at APHA. In this role, he leads the association's government relations and legislative advocacy activities on a variety of legislative issues, including health reform, environmental health, funding for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, injury control and prevention, and physical activity, nutrition, and obesity. Previously, Don was a public policy and public affairs consultant in San Francisco, California, where he worked for both corporate and nonprofit clients on a variety of public policy issues, including prescription drug access, tobacco control, and emergency health services. Don has also served as a congressional aide to U.S. Representative Sherrod Brown on several legislative issues, including the environment, financial services, education, crime, and judicial matters. After Don, we will have Audrey Pernick, who is the Senior Communications Specialist at the American Public Health Association. In this capacity, she develops and executes earned media strategies around the association's priorities and serves as the main contact for reporters. Audrey has recently worked on the media advocacy team at the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, the advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. There she helped secure media coverage of cancer advocacy issues, managed its advertising and social media efforts, and assisted with internal communications. Audrey began her career in television news as a local reporter for the CBS, ABC, and Fox affiliates in Charlottesville, Virginia. She's a graduate of American University in Washington, D.C., and is pursuing a master's in public health from the George Washington University. Next, we will have Ebonola Aniakaye. Her friends and family call her Ebby, so please feel free to do the same. She's currently the Policy Associate for Affiliate Affairs at APHA. Ebby brings experience from the Alliance of Health Reform, where she supported policy research in various areas, including health reform and health disparities, and brings experience from the National Governors Association, where she conducted research on the Affordable Care Act. Ebby holds a master's degree in public policy from George Mason University, and her undergraduate degree is in public policy studies from St. Mary's College of Maryland. So Don Hoppert is going to get us started here to talk about the APHA's advocacy tools.
Thank you, Nicole. Nicole is our government relations manager, and she's, those of you who are presenting know her because she's really coordinated this entire session. And you probably all, everyone who's here probably received several emails from her encouraging you to come today. And so I'm glad to see we have a great turnout this morning. Some faces I recognize, some I don't, so it's great to see some new folks in the room. And today I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of some of the tools that APHA has to help you be a successful advocate, and to give you a bit of an overview of some of the things that we've been working on this year, so you can see how we've taken those issues, done work from the Washington side, but also worked with APHA members and our affiliates to really push the message back in their home districts with their members of Congress. So let's go to our first slide. So APHA advocacy. This year we had quite a few members of APHA and our affiliates do visits on Capitol Hill. So during the year when some of the leadership, including the Action Board, APHA's Executive Board, APHA sections, some of which have mid-year meetings in Washington, D.C. at the APHA headquarters, the section chairs-elect, the affiliate presidents-elect, the actually the Council on Affiliates. I've learned that I was calling it the wrong name. Council on Affiliates, also known as the COA, and the Intersectional Council. So all of these various groups had a meeting at some point in Washington, D.C., and as part of their agenda, they agreed to do Hill visits. So during that time, APHA staff would get some time on their agenda, talk to the various groups about APHA's priorities. We scheduled the meetings for them, gave them the overview, prepared packets for them, and then sent them off to Capitol Hill to meet with their legislators to talk about APHA priority issues. So let's go to the next slide, please. Great. Some of the things that we have available to folks who may not be able to come to Washington to do a Hill visit during an APHA meeting, our website has really a lot of information up there that we're constantly adding to and updating to provide you with various resources that you can use in your advocacy efforts. Some examples, as I mentioned, the APHA website. On that website, we have things such as advocacy tips. We have APHA's congressional vote record, which is something we do every year, where we identify anywhere from 5 to 10 key congressional votes in the House and the Senate, key public health votes, and then we list how your members of Congress voted on those various bills and or amendments. So you can get a sense of, it's one tool you can use to kind of look at how your member of Congress, what their position has been on public health issues that APHA has counted as a priority. We have created state fact sheets that really outline some of the key health indicators in your state. This is a great leave-behind tool, particularly when you're talking about issues such as prevention and how prevention saves lives and reduces costs. These fact sheets have some good examples. It's always a good way to educate your legislators about how these issues impact their states. Inevitably, you know, it's great for Nicole and I to be in Washington and talk to them on the national level, but what it really comes down to is what they really want to hear from are from people in their districts carrying the same message as the APHA staff is. We've created a number of reports and fact sheets on a variety of issues. Some examples are, we recently released a report on the Prevention and Public Health Fund. That's a really good resource, gives you lots of background on what the fund is, how much money has been spent, where that money has gone, some examples of programs that are being funded. So it's a really great tool. And we also, shortly after the passage of the Affordable Care Act, put out two issue briefs, one more broadly on prevention provisions within the Affordable Care Act, which touches on the fund but also highlights a number of other provisions in the law, and a brief on the workforce provisions included in the ACA. Fact sheets I had mentioned. One of the big issues that we've been spending a lot of time on over the last few months is something called sequestration. How many of you have heard of sequestration? Okay, so about half of you have. Well, sequestration is bad. And what it is a couple years ago, Congress passed something called the Budget Control Act. It was an effort to look at the deficit. You know, the deficit is going up. People are concerned about that. We're concerned about it because that could have significant impacts on public health programs. And in order to start resolving that issue and to bring the deficit down, Congress passed this law called the Budget Control Act, which put caps into place on discretionary spending for non-defense and defense. In addition, they asked Congress to come up with a plan to reduce another $1.2 trillion from the deficit. And if Congress failed to do that, that automatic spending cuts would kick in. Well, of course Congress failed to do it, surprise, surprise. And so these automatic spending cuts are scheduled to go into effect in January of 2013. This would mean roughly an 8.2% across the board cut to every single program. So every program at CDC, every program at HRSA, every grant at NIH. So significant cut. So this is something we're really concerned about. Of course, Could Congress stop this from happening? Yes. But what would they have to do? They'd have to pass a deficit reduction bill. So we've been talking to folks on the Hill saying, you need to do something. You need to pass something that's balanced, that looks at all issues, doesn't just look at non-defense discretionary spending, which is where all the public health funding comes from, but also looks at things like tax reform and entitlements and really put everything on the table. That our programs, in particular those that fall under the non-defense discretionary, should not be the only thing targeted for savings. So we've been doing a lot of work on that. And then also our monthly legislative update is another great tool. How many of you have never heard of the legislative update? Good. Everybody knows it. It's something that Nicole and I pretty much write, and it's a highlight of the various activities we've undertaken. Of course, it's kind of like at the high levels, not every detail, but gives you a great overview of the issues we've been working on. We highlight various letters and statements APHA has made on priority issues, and we often include links to various action alerts that we're still encouraging members to take action on. So we'll go to the next one. Another thing that APHA does a lot is works in coalition with other health partners at the national level. Some examples, the first two you see there, the CDC coalition and the Friends of HRSA, those are both coalitions that APHA itself coordinates. There are roughly 130 other mostly national organizations that are members. So for instance, within the CDC coalition, the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Society, the Academy of Pediatrics, so they're all partners within that coalition. There's a lot of crossover between the two, but each year we go to Capitol Hill and set up meetings with mainly offices that sit on the Appropriations Committee to talk about why public health spending is so important and why our agencies should not be cut and why they should actually be increasing funding for many of these programs. We also belong to a number of other coalitions. The Coalition for Health Funding is an umbrella coalition that focuses kind of all across the public health continuum, represents organizations that are interested in CDC, HRSA, NIH, SAMHSA, ARC, really across the board. And every year we advocate kind of at the really high level to say how important public health spending is, and really it's a great way to focus in more on the more macro level, to talk with the budget committee, to let them know that unless we have a good allocation for the public health system overall, then we're not going to have enough funding down the road to fund agencies like CDC and HRSA. And it's also been a very successful effort to keep the various advocates from fighting against each other for various pots of money. It's a good way to go in for a unified way to say, we're not going to say, take from NIH to give to CDC or take from HRSA to give to FDA. We're going to say, just make sure you give us enough money to fully fund all of these agencies so they can do their job. And I won't go through all these, but this is just a list of some of the other coalitions that APHA is a member of. Go to the next one. Hopefully you all receive APHA's action alerts. This is one of the things that I say as an advocate, this is kind of the least that you could do because it's kind of the easiest thing. You get the email from me, you click on it, takes you to a pre-written letter that you can edit and send it off to your member of Congress with a few clicks. So it's a really easy way to stay in touch with your member of Congress and highlight an important issue that APHA is working on. APHA grassroots, when we use terms like that, that's you all. That's our members and the members of the APHA affiliates, and they're the ones who we send these alerts out to. APHA's grassroots responses are holding steady, but we're still far below capacity. Given the number of members that APHA has, which hovers right around 25,000, if we got every member to respond to each action alert that we sent, we would probably be like clogging up the system on Capitol Hill, which would be a good thing. But each time we get roughly, if we send an alert out to, let's say, every APHA member, we get maybe a 2 or 3% response. Now, that's statistically about the industry average. So APHA is not doing way worse than other organizations, but I certainly think that we could do better. So I'm just encouraging you, when you do get alerts, please take the time to respond to it, share it. There are features within the email that you get that will allow you to share it with other colleagues, with your friends and family. Obviously, you don't want to spam everybody, but if it's an important issue and you know other folks that would be interested, please take the time and forward it on to them. APHA advocacy, more about action alerts. These are just some examples of some of the alerts that we've sent out this year. I've mentioned sequestration. That's kind of the hot one now. That's the last alert we sent out to everyone was on sequestration. We're going to keep doing that and staying in touch with Congress as much as we can on this issue until they hopefully resolve it before January. The Prevention and Public Health Fund, protecting the Affordable Care Act. You probably all know that the Affordable Care Act has been under attack, particularly in the House of Representatives over the last year. I think there have been 30 some odd votes to either repeal or cut or block various provisions within in the law over the last year. So we've done a number of alerts related to that. Public health funding, again, funding for CDC and HRSA, which are the two primary agencies that APHA leads the effort on. The Farm Bill, which is up for reauthorization, actually expired at the end of September, which is kind of shocking. Luckily, there aren't any immediate impacts of that, but if Congress doesn't get their act together and get something done before the beginning of next year, we could see food prices start to go up, so this could be a serious issue. The Clean Air Act, protecting the Clean Air Act from various attacks to various attempts to block or repeal important rules to reduce pollution. Transportation, the transportation bill was reauthorized several months ago, and APHA was involved in those efforts. Reproductive health and school health are just a couple of others that we've done this year. Now I'm just going to talk a little bit about our FACT campaign. How many of you have never heard of the FACT campaign? Okay, so not too many. So FACT stands for Public Health Action Campaign, and several years ago, we developed this campaign to encourage APHA members and the affiliates during the August into September congressional recess when Congress is out of session and members are back in their states. We started this campaign to encourage APHA members to, you know, meet with their members of Congress, submit letters to the editor on the issues that we're focusing on for that given year. It's kind of a way to make it easier for you all to engage with your members of Congress without having to come to Washington to do it. And we've had a number of affiliates that did a lot of great things this year. Some examples, the affiliates in Montana, Ohio, Mississippi, and Iowa all held meetings with their congressional offices. Montana had, in fact, had a meeting with their senator, Senator Tester, where they took about 15 public health professionals, not all of which were APHA members. Some were APHA members, some were Montana Public Health Association members, some were from other partner organizations within the state. So they had a broad representation, so that was a great opportunity. We had a number of letters to the editor and op-eds published in several states, including Montana, Ohio, Nebraska, North Dakota. And some others submitted in other states that maybe didn't get published, but it's still a good way to, you know, just making the attempt is good. And also letters were sent to legislators in Ohio, Montana, Iowa, Maine, and Mississippi, most of them focusing on sequestration and the importance of public health funding, really to get the local APHA members and affiliates to bring this issue to the attention of their legislators. So while they're hearing it from APHA, they're also hearing it from folks within their state. And of course, the action alerts, some of which I mentioned earlier. So our 2012 FACT campaign, again, it occurred during the August congressional recess. Although I will say some states who are really into this, like Montana and Ohio, continued their efforts well into September this year as well as last year, and this coming year we're hoping to get an even earlier start. Action board members, APHA members, affiliates, and other advocates were asked to take action in support of public health, and these were the key issues that were part of the FACT campaign this year: increasing public health funding, and during the year we kind of made that more of a sequestration ask. Supporting the Prevention Public Health Fund, and strengthening nutrition and hunger provisions within the Farm Bill reauthorization bill. And our FACT campaign website contained a lot of great information, including a toolkit and other advocacy resources that folks used when they were doing those visits back in the States. National Public Health Week. Okay, I'm going to get in trouble for that last bullet because that's not supposed to be public yet. So nobody make any announcement about that. Sorry, Eddie. But I'll talk about 2012. This year's theme was A Healthier America Begins Today. Join the movement. It took place during April 2nd through the 8th. How many folks here participated in any type of National Public Health Week event? So pretty good number. We had several online tools. There was a National Public Health Week website and a video. Some of the materials that were developed for National Public Health Week, there was a toolkit, information about events that were taking place across the U.S., and also some partner resources. And as far as outreach at the national level, APHA worked with members of Congress to get House and Senate resolutions introduced highlighting the National Public Health Week theme, and we also included some action alerts in the National Public Health Week newsletter. So we'll go to the next slide. I'm going to pretend that last bullet wasn't there. So that is an overview of some of the things that we've done this year, some of the priority issues that we've worked on, and some of the resources that APHA provides. I think we're going to hold off the Q&A until our three panelists are done. So I look forward to taking any questions that you might have. Thanks a lot.
Now I'll turn it over to Audrey
Furness. Thank you. So good morning. I'm the communication specialist at APHA and kind of on the front lines of working with reporters for our executive director, Dr. Georges Benjamin, but then also just kind of raising the specter of what APHA does on a national level and also within Washington, D.C. And certainly we are supporting communications here at the annual meeting as well. So I'm kind of here to talk about the overlap that media support can provide to the ongoing work that you do. You know, it's not rocket science working with reporters, what we do here, but there is a little bit of protocol. And so I hope that I can kind of walk you through some of the work that we do on the team that I'm on, and then share some of the tools and takeaways that you can take back with you to your local markets. So thank you. So we do a range of different things. I'm on about a three-person team at APHA managing communications proper. So we do a fair amount of media advocacy work, supporting our legislative priorities of the year, working with health policy reporters that cover health, with Roll Call, Politico, CQ, Modern Healthcare. There's a lot of outlets that really watch some of the legislation that we support, and I work with those reporters. Inside Public Health, which is our member-only newsletter that goes out monthly, one of my colleagues manages that and pushes that out. We certainly support media outreach for the American Journal of Public Health. We work with reporters that cover embargoed releases, embargoed research, and work to push out some of the research that is published every month. We're here at annual meeting supporting a lot of the work that our members are presenting. We have 5 embargoed press releases that we're pushing out around 5 different presentations that will lift on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. So I'm working with national reporters covering some of the really great work that's being presented that's never been published, never been released before. So we're kind of coinciding some of that the presentations with the annual meeting. And then social media, we have a huge array of different social media channels that we promote and that we manage. And I'll get into a little bit about that in a second. And then our newest tool is called the Public Health Newswire. I serve as the co-editor of this site. And it was something that we started about a year and a half ago to really provide some transparency to members and certainly non-members about the work that we do. And so I'll walk you through the site if you've not been familiar with it. But it's kind of our little baby that we have within the communications team to market some of the work that perhaps doesn't merit a press release, but it's also just a really great channel to talk about the work of public health at the national and local levels. So this is just some of the media support that we did last year. This was a presenter that did work on military families and health among siblings, sons and daughters of those whose parents have been deployed. So it was just, we went to Fox News last year in D.C., and it's one of the, you know, research pieces that got some news coverage. So we went there with her. And here's just a kind of obnoxious slide of some of the coverage that we've had over the past year. Dr. B was talking about, we were in North Carolina when the SCOTUS ruling came down, so we reached out to local reporters. We got him on the local news channels there. And then you can see just some of a wide, healthy array of other coverage that we've garnered over the past year. And this is our menu of social media channels. We have more than perhaps we even know about. There's a lot that's going on that we really do try and promulgate over the course of the year. So certain channels are more, there's more focus at certain times of the year. Obviously, our annual meetings blog is one that we're really working on over the course of the next couple days. We have a staff of about 3 people working, covering sessions, and covering the blog. So if you've not signed up for updates for this blog, I highly suggest it. My colleagues do extraordinary work highlighting some of the work that's going on at annual meeting, and it's they've got a really cute kind of kitschy way of being able to provide some of that coverage. So I highly suggest it. Our hashtag #APHA12 is booming. There's a huge conversation going on Twitter via the hashtag right now. So if you're on Twitter, please check that out. At Public Health is obviously one of our main channels. We're up to, I don't even know, almost 200,000? No, we're well past 200,000 followers of that channel. Pinterest is one of our newer channels. It's beyond mason jars and wedding dresses. My colleague that manages that has done an extraordinary job of being able to enterprise some of the boards that we have on their publications, infographics, news you can use, all sorts of different nice ways of being able to couch public health on a channel that is perhaps not one of the more traditional public health ways of being able to get the word out. So go ahead. Thanks. And then for National Public Health Week, this was a Twitter chat that we hosted last year with Dr. Howard Coe. He's the Assistant Secretary of Health. So Dr. B was with us to be a part of that chat. And you can see it was not just Dr. B. It was a whole team of people that were helping to support the conversation. So we had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 different computers set up, all managing a chat remotely with Dr. Coe, who was across the city, and we were talking about the theme of the National Public Health Week theme, and doing that by way of this #NPHW chat. So it was this was our second year of doing a chat. It was our first year of actually doing it with Dr. B and then another public health luminary. So it was successful, and it is a really nice non-traditional way of being able to conversate with others. So this is National Public, no it's not, it's Public Health Newswire. This is kind of a screenshot of what you'll see if you go to www.publichealthnewswire.org. We are putting forth new content every single day, whether it's a roundup of public health news coverage, not necessarily coverage that we have been a part of, but just important news stories that are happening nationally and across the country and across the world. We also enterprise news stories by doing interviews, Q&As with APHA members, with other partners. Here's one that we did with Susan Blumenthal. And it's like I said, it's a nice way of being able to, you know, enterprise and raise visibility to some of the work that might not have been recognized if we weren't able to, you know, that doesn't necessarily merit a press release, but it's another way of being able to kind of bring about some of the great work that we're doing and that our members are doing throughout the course of the year. Thanks. So Don mentioned the FACT campaign. We had a really successful year this past year with FACT campaign coverage. So again, another obnoxious slide of different news coverage and headlines. And one thing I want to mention about this, so there's about 15 tracked placements at least that we were able to track on our media services, which garnered about 400,000 impressions total, which is extraordinary, I think, for us in the little communications team that could. And in addition to just placements, we had retweets and other postings and other mentions of the work. So it's not just about getting it posted and published, but it's also about, you know, posting it to other social media sites or acknowledging the results to some of our partners. RWJF was great about reposting and retweeting, and then the Herndon Alliance was another place where they included it in their daily roundup. So I'm going to actually mention something that I might regret, but in terms of a rule of thumb that I've always ascribed to in terms of kind of providing some of that guidance at the local level, I have up until now have always said it's really important to just go from paper to paper and just select one local daily in your market and focus on that daily and try and pitch specifically to one paper at a time, which I think has been a traditional piece of guidance. We had an interesting occurrence this past year where in Montana, for instance, they posted the same gosh darn op-ed in all of the different dailies. So, you know, maybe it might be worth taking a finer look at what your local paper does. If it's, if it's a local market, they might be hungry for the coverage. So they might be interested in posting it in other places, and they might just not be very competitive about it. If you're in, you know, the Washington, D.C. area, it's going to be a different animal. But it's certainly if you're in a smaller local media market, it's worth considering posting or reaching out to several dailies at a time. So I didn't think I'd ever say that, but based on some of our successes, that was one takeaway that we experienced. So just a couple of key outreach tactics. Personal stories are king. So get your personal story out there. Your personal perspective is the one thing that reporters and editorial editors are looking for. Be cognizant of that news cycle. Know when it would work for you. If there's a presidential election coming up, they might be slammed with other coverage. If you can kind of think ahead of time in terms of where there might be some lulls and where things haven't been talked about, that's your opportunity. So just be cognizant, make it work for you. And it really does depend on what's being covered at the local level. Know your op-ed editor and your health reporter. Even though markets have kind of compressed and condensed, there are still folks covering local health issues, whether it's just a local beat reporter or if they still actually have a local health reporter. And we're here at APHA to help identify who those people actually are. So who is the Rich Dailies, or who writes for local health coverage, and we're there to provide that that contact information. We have a huge database of reporters that we can identify for you. And it's really just, it's not about finding a huge mass of reporters. It's about knowing and getting your name out to that particular health reporter that you think is important to connect with and to garner a good relationship with. And then lastly, I just put some newsworthiness factors down there: local data, timely, personal angle, like I said. And if it's a television, if it's visually appealing, then it might be worth going to your local assignment editor, local health reporter there. Thanks. Like I said, we are here to help build out some of those media lists. We have template communications for National Public Health Week and for the FACT campaign around those three legislative priorities that Don mentioned. There's always reporters asking for state-specific folks that can provide that local perspective. So if you do have a local story, we're here to help and kind of strategize with you. In that same vein, there are national reporters that are looking for local affiliates, local APHA members that can help provide some of that local angle. And, yeah, go ahead. And then lastly, there's one of which I've already mentioned, but the National Cancer Institute has something called a Pink Book. So just Google NCI Pink Book. It's a wonderful resource on developing and executing and evaluating communications campaigns. So it's a major go-to for communicators, and it's a wonderful primer. Like I said, Public Health Newswire. There's always a great. We're putting out stuff every day. We have an editorial calendar that we manage and. And we're also covering here at annual meeting. And then lastly, this Larry Wallach, he was one of our keynotes for a mid-year meeting that we hosted 2 years ago. And he provided a really fascinating primer on media advocacy. So kind of that 30,000-foot view of what media advocacy is. That, data is only good as far as you can promote the work and the data at the local level. And if you have the audience asking the right questions, then that, it works in tandem with some of the great work that you're already doing. So it's a wonderful way of being able to kind of see how you can use some of the work that you're doing and let media outreach complement some of that. So certainly local leadership is something that we're always looking for in terms of authoring some of those template communications, the letters to the editor, the op-eds. We're certainly looking for other stories to cover on Public Health Newswire, and always the Prevention Fund was something that was really near and dear to our hearts this past year, and it's something that we'll continue to advocate for, and that local perspective is always important. All right. Thank you. Here's Eddie.
Hi, everyone. As Don said, my name is Ebenola Nyakaye, but I go by Ebby. And I primarily work with affiliate affairs, and I primarily work on supporting them in their advocacy and their policy. So pretty much I'm kind of like the liaison between the affiliates and their advocacy and policy, and I'm working with government relations and media to help them in their local priorities and also on the national level. So pretty much trying to bring that together, making public health a priority on a national and local level. General resources, as some of my colleagues have already described, is National Public Health Week, Get Ready, in fact. They all have websites that you can go to that have brochures. National Public Health Week has a list of activities you can do. And the more you get involved with these national campaigns in your local area, the more awareness public health receives. So, for example, on our National Public Health Week webpage, we have a news feed of the Public Health Newswire. So we're trying to bring everything together and give you guys the most information that you guys can use in order to make your program successful in each one. Get Ready has issue briefs in regards to preparedness. So for example, Sandy is coming down. It'd be great for individuals to go to Get Ready and see what you can do in regards to floods and getting that information out there to your community. So there's a lot of information, just general resources that you can use from our national campaigns that you can use on the state level. As you can see, there's a list that a lot of us up here have gone through, but I really wanted you guys to pay attention to the last three, which are really specific to affiliates and things that Affiliate Affairs provides to state affiliates and APHA members. That would be the state bill tracking, Conveo action alerts, and the affiliate online community. So bill tracking. We've heard from affiliates in the past that they would like a program that would help them track their legislation within their state. So APHA decided to provide that service with a bill tracking tool. And what it is, it's run by CQ, but it's a map of the United States. And what it does is it goes through, for example, if I want to track in North Dakota, for example, I will hover over the North Dakota state, and while it's in its state legislator, it will track all the legislation that I want or whoever the affiliate wants to track. So for example, if North Dakota calls APHA, I want to track nutrition, we can track that for them and they can get daily emails on how that legislation is going. You can target it to based specific topics, so like I said, nutrition, physical activity, whatever it is that your state is really focusing on. So it's tobacco, we can get that done, get those alerts for you to make it a little easier for you to go to your legislator and know what's going on, and so it's not as hard for you trying to sift through your state's website and trying to get things together and whether or not it's gone through its first reading and hearing. It makes it a little easier. So we're trying to help you guys out in your advocacy work. Also, like I said, you can search by bill number, so it's a really good tool. Affiliate Affairs is actually going to host the webinar on the 16th to help affiliate leaders know how to use it. And so you can always call us, but it'd be great if you guys just knew how to get through the basics, and if anything went wrong, you can always call us up and we can help you guys out. But I really wanted to stress that how great that tool is that we're finally provided, because we heard your voices and we really wanted to get you guys involved and make your job a little easier. This is kind of the bill tracking device is hosted on the affiliate online community, and all affiliate members have access to this affiliate online community. And this is kind of a snapshot of the states. So you would hover over a state. I think one of the states there is maybe Alaska is hovered over, and it'll list everything in Alaska in regards to the topic that we chose. So it's really great, and you can print these out and. It's a really good tool that I found helpful, because I sometimes track state legislative things and I'm like, oh, I want to know what things are going on in New York, and I want to know what's going on in certain states, so it's pretty awesome. Conveo Multicenter, we were talking about the action alerts that APHA members receive. Conveo is the program that helps us do that. And we, in 2009, gave affiliates the opportunity to have that same program, of course, at a discounted price, to do the same thing within their state. 22 affiliates right now have the Conveo Multi-Center platforms, but it gives you the ability to send action alerts and create your own action alerts and send it to a mass amount of people, and it also helps in regards to fundraising. So you have this database of all the individuals that you want to get in contact with or keep communications with. But it makes it very easy, because the advocacy alerts automatically, if you put in your zip code, it'll make it easier for them to send what the letter is or the LTE or the op-guide to that legislator. So we think that was a really good program to give to you guys. Instead of doing an outlook of 59 different people and sending 3 emails to the same distribution list, it makes it really easy for you to just put in the advocacy alert in the in Conveo and then sending it out in mass. Right now we're going through the renewal process of it right now, so we're going to see if we can expand it to other affiliates. But I, again, am the resource person, kind of like the connection between states, their affiliates, and how they use Conveo. So if you have a Conveo question, you can call me up, but I don't know, then we'll go to the higher ups. But we're trying to get affiliates to use it, because it's a really good tool and it makes life a little bit easier in regards to garnering support and advocacy. And then also the affiliate online community. If you're an affiliate leader or you have an affiliate leader, I would stress the fact that they should, you know, go on. It's a place where, one, you can talk to other affiliates in different states. We have discussion forums. We actually have a policy and advocacy folder. And we usually put things as such as the issue briefs, the now the legislative reports in there. So it's all in one place. So you don't necessarily have to sift through APHA's website and you're kind of like, oh, should I search it? Where would this be found? But it's all in one place for you to use. And then, like I said, it's also a discussion forum. If, let's say, California is doing really great work and you want to know more about that, you can contact the affiliate leader in California and say, hey, I've heard you're doing a lot of work. Are there any tips? A lot of our affiliate staff and executive directors use it and post their best practices. Like, this is what helped in Montana. We had coalitions. Maybe you should do the same thing in your state. And I think it's really good to learn from other people, because there's but so much we can tell you guys on a national level, but if a similar state is doing the same thing or having a similar problem, you can always communicate with them and say, you know, how'd you guys do this? How'd you get around this? You know, and I think it's very beneficial, and a lot of affiliates have learned a couple of things from the discussion forums. And then also there's a lot of things going on in public health, and we really try to post as many announcements as we can to the affiliate online community, because we don't want to flood your inboxes with every webinar known to mind, whether it's nutrition or healthy farms and healthy eating. So what we try to do is we have announcements, and we try and post as many things there for affiliates can use. So whether it's funding opportunities, grant opportunities, webinars by CDC, action alerts, anything that would help benefit the states and APHA members, we try to put it on the affiliate online community, because we really don't want to flood your – you don't want 10 emails from APHA a day. I don't want 10 emails from APHA a day. So we're trying to make it easier for you guys and put everything in one place. And like I said, we provide resource libraries. The Policy Center came out with a prevention issue brief, which I thought was really great. And so we put it in the resource library. There's a resource library, like public health resources. And it's basically the 101s and any webinar we've done, we try to put the links there. And then we also have a newsletter that goes out to affiliate leaders, and we try to put more information in that too. So we're trying to streamline all the resources that we have. Audrey said, if you have a specific issue, you know, contact us and we may be able to help. Kansas recently did that about an issue that they had, and we really worked together, and our communications team put together, helped them create a great LTE, and it got submitted, and I think it was last week it got published. And so, and it wasn't really specific. It was specific to Kansas, but overall it was a national issue that APHA had a stance on. So it really helped. And so if you have any questions, just feel free to call us. We're really willing to help any way that we can. And I think that's all.
Questions for any of us? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're continuing discussions about that internally, not only in our department, but also with our folks who administer our Conveo system. So some of the things we're doing is we're looking at playing around with, what does the subject line say when you're sending an alert out to somebody? You know, we're starting to look at ways that we can test those to see if response rates change depending on what the actual subject line says. So simple things like that. Trying to limit the number that we send is another key thing. So we've started looking at when we send an alert out to everybody, instead of sending a follow-up to everybody, just hitting the people who haven't responded. That's something that Conveo can do as well. So those are a couple of things that we're playing around with. It's always tricky, because every time I have a conversation at the APHA meeting, and you guys all know this because you guys are always the ones who tell us this, APHA is only one of the organizations that you belong to. It may not even be your primary organization. I hope it is your primary organization. But we understand that there's a lot of competing interests and there's a lot of information coming at you. So we're doing our best to try to make sure that we're not, we have this whole process now for any email that goes out. We have to get on a schedule and get it approved. Before, it was not like that within APHA, and so people were probably getting multiple things. Now we're combining things that can be combined. So really looking at ways to target better, reduce the number of emails that you have to send. Those are a few things that we're working on. Understanding that people have a lot of interest and they're members of lots of other organizations and that there's always going to be competition, but trying to find ways that'll make ours stand out a little more. But it's a tough thing, and we're kind of still in the early stages of looking at how to better do that. But as we go forward and as we make discoveries, we'll be sure to let you guys know. What's online, right?
So, you know, it's great. Everybody's multiplying all this online stuff, but you have to really ask. Seniors vote.
Yep.
They are involved in politics. Mm-hmm. Getting there myself, I just really want you to encourage you to think outside the box. Everybody's going for all this online stuff. Think about who you want to reach and evaluate. Are you reaching
We do have the statistics. I don't know what they are, but I do know that the majority of APHA members do have access. Of course, there's always going to be some gaps. I can talk to our membership department and follow up with you on exactly what those stats say. We also have similar tools as to what Sophie has on our website. Not only in the FACT campaign toolkit, but if you go to our advocacy tips page, there are all kinds of things, how to set up a meeting, how to conduct a meeting. A lot of those state-specific sheets that I mentioned are there to really, our job is really to provide you with the best tools that we can to make you want to do what we want you to do. And so if we're providing things and you're like, this doesn't make sense or this isn't what I want, you know, that's not going to spur you to do it. So as you check out our website, I would encourage you all, when you get some time, go onto our advocacy pages and take a look and let us know what you think. We've generally gotten good responses, but I always am interested in hearing, you know, what's missing, what's a new tool that you don't see up there that you think might be helpful. We're certainly willing to take all that into consideration. So thanks for raising that. Yes, Rosie.
This is a question probably for Emmy and for the affiliates. Mm-hmm. I'm from the occupational health section,
okay.
And I can sort of picture us wanting to know, for example, which states might have their own safe patient listing bill in progress,
right.
Which states might have workplace violence.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of two questions here. One is, do the sections have the ability to kind of contact this? And also, how do we know if, or how would we find out if this is also of interest to the local affiliates? Because I often feel like it's just like
two
separate, you know, kind of passing in the night kind of organizations in a way, that the sections and then the affiliates.
Well, it's really interesting because we're actually, during this meeting, we're actually having a meeting with with affiliates and section leaders about trying to bring together the advocacy and actually working together as we speak, which I'm going to like run to after this. But organizationally, we're trying to work
with each other and trying to get section members who are involved in their affiliates or in the same state as affiliates to get them involved with their affiliates, so that way, if that's your particular section, you can just go to your local affiliate and say, hey, I need help with this and that, and your affiliate can contact me and be like, hi, we have a concerned affiliate member or a constituent in our state that's really concerned about this, this, and this. Can you set up a legislative alert about this type of legislation? And also about that, we're trying really hard to, at the affiliate level, we've heard from you guys, and we've heard that you guys do want more advocacy training, and we're going to try and provide more technical assistance in that type of training. And we usually hold our president-elect's meeting along with the section elect meeting, so leaders in the sections. And so we're trying to work together to train them so they can go back and train you guys in regards to advocacy and what are the resources that they have involved. But we've noticed that they've been separate, and we're trying now, especially here at AMB, to bring you guys together so that we can be more efficient. You know, working together makes, you know, all efficient. There's no point of you guys trying to do something on your own where you can literally just ask us and, you know, have that tool. But it is really communication. We're not in your state, so it's really hard for us to bring you guys together. But if you're in the same state working with your affiliate, it makes it so much easier. So I would advise working with your affiliate so we can get your priorities.
And we're here definitely to help make those connections for you as well. So if there is a state and you want to know, you know, we talk to the affiliate leadership all the time. So we're happy to help marry those two. So you can talk about, is this an issue in your state, or even just asking them what priority issues is your affiliate tracking. We have some of that information, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it's something that we can share with mm-hmm. section leaders. So, yeah.
Actually, as a follow-up, I know they started the well section, and I didn't know, are the affiliates also a part of the well, so there would be a way for sections and affiliates to cross-pollinate discussions?
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to give you the wrong answer.
Yeah.
I do know we are keeping the affiliate online community, but I do think affiliate members would have access, not necessarily now, but maybe in the future.
Good question. Yeah, I mean, if you're an APHA member, you'll have that crossover if you're
right.
an affiliate and an APHA member, but if you're not,
then you don't.
I don't think right now there's a way for them to communicate via the well, because they don't, the affiliates themselves do not have a well account. They've got the online community. Now, whether the COA or other APHA leader groups are going to have access to that, I don't know. So we can talk to Component Affairs, who's
right.
overseeing that, and of course with Affiliate Affairs to see where that, if that's possible, and if so, we'll let you know. That's a good question, though.
Right.
Right.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we usually do is we send it to the affiliate leaders, like the president, the executive director, and then we hope that based off that email that they can send it to the correct person within their affiliate. So maybe the executive director is not the person who wants to learn bill track. Maybe it's their policy committee chair. Well, then they can then, you know, inform their policy committee chair. But I will be sending reminders all through as soon as we get back to D.C. About the webinar.
Will that also go out in the
available
section?
I think it's available for sections, but I would follow up. I would send a follow-up email just to make sure. But I think it is, section leaders will have the option.
Yeah, that's crazy that you didn't come out with the ability to introduce myself as a really funny person. Really great.
Well, don't forget, the affiliates are not APHA, right? They're their own organizations, so we can't just send them their lists, whatever we want, their rules and restrictions on what we can do. So that's an issue. But we do, you know, we're always happy to try to link folks up with section leaders, but when it comes to like sending things out to their members and using their lists, we have to be mindful that they use their list for all kinds of stuff too. So we can't just like flood their list with APHA related email. Now we do often ask them to forward things or to take things that we've done and craft them into their own email that they'll then send out to their affiliate members. So my main suggestion would be if there is a state that you want to bring an issue before, all of the affiliate leaders' contact information is on the APHA website, so I would encourage you to reach out to them. We're always looking for ways to try to link the, during the FACT campaign, that's been one of the struggles that we've had is trying to, because an advocacy campaign is usually state-based when you're trying to do something during a recess in congressional districts. So the default is always like, well, the affiliates, because they're in that state that we're trying to target. But we are always trying to make the connection between APHA members who live in that state and get them talking to the affiliates so they can engage in those activities as well. We're going to be trying to do a stronger push on that next year during the FACT campaign. So because we have limited resources on states that we can actually target, when I say target, that means we have a few extra resources that we can use to try to help them along. You know, once we know what those states are, we will try to do a better job at reaching out to the sections so they can help us, A, tell us if they're interested, and if they are, help us make that connection between their section members that reside in those particular target states. Yes, and we've done it. We've done it before. And even beyond APHA members, like I was saying, Montana, they worked with the Montana Heart Association, the Montana Kansas Society, so they went well beyond even contacting APHA members, but went to their partners in those states as well. Yes?
Take it, and we kind of, you know, said avoided the question by
I'll just address that one first. My initial response would be, I'm not the member of Congress. I didn't run for office, and it's not my job to make those decisions. I'm just here to tell you why you shouldn't cut public health, right? And you give them the evidence and say, this is why it's important. You know, we have been good so far, well beyond the public health community, working with everyone that falls within that non-defense discretionary, so that's education, environmental protection, transportation, all the other sectors that aren't defense that are funded through the federal government through discretionary dollars. Mm-hmm. We've all been very good at keeping a consistent message with Congress and with the media saying, don't cut non-defense discretionary spending. And then as we're doing our individual little meetings, we say, and this is why, and we talk about public health, and the transportation groups talk about transportation. But we've all said, top line, don't cut this chunk. So it might be, there might be an opportunity at the state level for you as well to hook up with some of the, you know, non-traditional partners, or even within the public health community in some states. I know there are strong relationships between the transportation sector and the public health sector. So if you have those types of relationships, or with the environmental protection folks and the public health folks, if you have those relationships, trying to get them to join with you in that messaging so they see it's not just public health, but it's all these other sectors that have been impacted as well. And just one statistic to throw out there that you can use in these meetings is that on average since 2010, non-defense discretionary spending has been cut already by 10%. Mm-hmm. So that's already a big chunk. And the Budget Control Act, as I mentioned, put those discretionary caps in place. That's a cut. We've already taken a lot of cuts, and we've taken a lot of cuts that were recommended by things like the Simpson-Bowles deficit reduction report. So a lot of these recommendations that have come out for deficit reduction, part of what they suggested was capping discretionary spending. Congress has already done that. So that's another thing that that you can use to kind of throw back at them and say, hey, we've been cut. We're always the last ones on the table. It's not Medicare. It's not Social Security. It's not defense. It's us. It's public health and all of the other things that fall under non-defense. So, yes, Rosie.
Well, so this is a little touchy then, but yep. So you don't want to be telling people, well, you know, go cut Medicare,
no.
And go cut
exactly.
Social Security.
Right.
But on the other hand, I mean, are there like statistics that might be reasonable to put out there about one day in, you know, Afghanistan costs? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know that's touchy. I know.
Yeah.
Or one huge piece of equipment, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, is it fair to go after the military stuff or not?
We don't. We don't. A, because we've got APHA members who are part of that complex. We don't because, again, we're basically telling Congress to do their job and to take a balanced approach. And when we say balanced approach, we mean everything should be looked at. And so that's a way to deliver that message as well without having to say you should take it from here or take it from there or take it from here. But that everything should be on the table and you shouldn't just be focusing on non-defense discretionary. So, yes. It's not an issue that we've done a lot at the national level. We've mostly, as I said, focused our efforts on the existing federal resources that are going to states and localities. You know, CDC funding, for example, about 70% of that goes directly out to state and local. So it's not an issue that we've really really targeted at this point.
I feel like that's the reason behind the cut.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you look at the public health infrastructure, certainly the private industry is not funding that. You know, just since 2008, ASTO and NACHO have reported over 52,000 jobs cut from state and local public health departments. And if there was sufficient private resources coming in to take and backfill the cuts at the state, local, and federal level, then I don't think you'd be seeing all of those layoffs. So I think that's I don't think that's happening right now, so I'm not sure that that's an area that we would try to highlight. But I'd be curious, if you have more info about it, I'd be curious to see.
Like the grant writing,
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you do hear that a lot when it comes to, like, things like SNAP and other hunger programs where people say, well, what about charity? Charity can take care of the food banks can handle it. And we definitely fight back against that. We're like, the food banks are kind of a supplement to what the government does, but it's really our responsibility to take care of people, ensure that they don't go hungry. So, yes. We do have folks at APHA that work on development issues, and we can also talk to the folks in our public health policy division to see if they're aware of resources like that. I'm assuming there must be some data out there that highlights what foundations are funding what types of programs. It's just not an area that I work in, so I'm not familiar with it, but I can certainly ask and see if anyone's familiar with that.
I know on the affiliate level that we try, I know that on the affiliate level we try to, this is one of the things we're trying to do now because we've heard your voices about how can we get more money. Like, you know, affiliates need money. They need staff in order to do work. So we're trying to, right now we're trying to figure out ways to give information to affiliate leaders so they can give to their members about things that they can, grants that they can have. I think there's a report or a newsletter that one of my colleagues in affiliate affairs that she subscribes to that gives pretty much a list of all the different types of grants, and she kind of sifts through it and see what local departments and things like that that they can actually use, and then tries to give the information out to affiliate members, and a lot of them are state-based, but we're trying now. That's one of the things that we're trying to do, at least on a lower level, trying to get that information out. So it is a concern that we work
with
there.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously there are grants that can get paid and stuff that's similar to having relationships with government agencies and congresspeople, having relationships with private funders.
Yep. I mean, we're in the same boat. We're like, okay, so we're prepared as we can be, whatever the outcome's going to be. But, you know, it's either going to be us going back after the election and reminding people kind of what we've said to them, or it's going to be us having to go and educate a bunch of new people who have no idea what the heck sequestration is.
I'm hoping it's not the latter, but I'm sure there'll be some of that. There are obviously going to be some new members on both sides of the aisle who are going to have to be educated about these issues, and so we're going to have to continue expand what we've been doing to make sure that they're aware of the impacts on the issues that we're concerned about.
So just following up on that, yep. I mean, sequestration is going to get fixed, really going to get fixed during a lame duck session, right? I mean, so you're still talking to the old people, right?
Yes, but they could do something where they delay it until 6 months later, or they could deal with part of it now and say, well, we're gonna cut X amount, but then we're gonna push all the hard stuff into the next Congress. So I'd be surprised if they had some grand deal during, but they have to, right? We all think they have to do something to avoid the full thing from kicking in January. So let me take you. You've been waiting a while.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we have a staff person who works on global health, and I'd be happy to connect you with her. She works with the World Federation of Public Health Associations on behalf of APHA. Her name's Vina, and I'd be happy to connect you with her, because I know she's, and of course we have the International Health Section within APHA that does a lot of work on those issues as well. So, sure. Do we have time for maybe...
So we're this new wing, if you will, of the IFC and the COA. And so I'm interested in learning about the route a little bit more because we're not yet integrated in that. I'm also the policy chair-elect for the Agency for Dialogue Year Caucus, and I'll be on the Governing Council. So one of the things I'm interested in knowing is how our ethnic caucuses or even the 17 caucuses overall can utilize whatever, the LGBT Congressional Caucus, the Asian Pacific Islander Caucus, et cetera, to kind of help amplify what we're doing in public health. So that's a different approach in terms of inside-outside strategy to address that.
I would contact the individuals in Component Affairs because.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I would contact the individuals in Component Affairs because what they do is work with the sections and the caucuses, and I'm more of on the affiliate side. So we do interact with them, but I'm not exactly sure how they work between each other and the rules or the regulations involved in how they communicate with each other, but I would definitely forward you to the individuals who work with the caucuses and the SPIGs and everyone else in order to...
And Elena, you may be aware of this, but APHA did receive funding for some work with the caucuses to kind of build their infrastructure. I'm not directly related to that project, but again, that is something that's happening through Component Affairs. So if you haven't had a chance to talk to Fran and her staff about that, just to kind of see like what the plans are there and where that work is going, I would highly suggest that. As far as members working with congressional caucuses, I think it's great. I mean, we've got all these materials on APHA priorities that we're happy for any APHA or affiliate member to kind of make sure that those folks know about it. I mean, Nicole and I obviously meet with member offices that are parts that are on those caucuses, and from time to time we'll meet with the offices that actually coordinate those caucuses. But, you know, getting the APHA caucuses to chime in with them about APHA priorities, I say the more the merrier. That would really be a great idea.
Would there be any utility in asking the affiliates if they would have an interest in learning more about the caucuses the congressional caucuses that she's describing, and maybe creating some kind of bridge work as I try to work in your direction, say offering a webinar that she would talk about how to work with two affiliates, wondering if there may be an opportunity to have more cross pollination, not saying we will contact your members because they're not going to be able to say, but maybe to have a that needs to
Well, I mean, we're still struggling so much with getting affiliates to contact their own members of Congress that to take it to that level at this point would be they'd be like, what the heck's a caucus? So, but that, down the road, absolutely. And for APHA members or affiliate members that have existing relationships with those groups, I say great, you know, and working through the existing APHA caucuses to find out, like, who they may have good relationships with already, I think it's another way to go. But we're still kind of at the early, I mean, some of our affiliates are like superstars when it comes to advocacy, and others aren't quite there yet. But that's definitely an area that we'll look to once we get some of them a little more beefed up. Yeah. Which again is one of the reasons that we're trying to highlight so much the work that affiliates are doing during the FACT campaign on the federal level, to show that, you know, some of it, yes, it takes time and work and coordinating and getting willing bodies to participate, but with a lot of the resources we provided, you know, Montana's like geographically a huge state with a few people living there, and to see the work that our Montana affiliate has done, it's like makes my head spin. I'm like, holy moly. And we did give them some additional support, but it's not like we were sending bodies out there to help them. We were really just helping them coordinate and giving them, you know, samples, letters, meeting requests. You know, we did a webinar with section and affiliate leaders for the FACT campaign to talk about all the tools we had. So really just getting them kind of armed with the materials that they needed, and, you know, they kind of took it on their own and really ran with it. So we're seeing some of them really step up and do it, and it's getting better every year. So I'm hoping, you know, before I retire, that every affiliate will be like Montana. Okay, one more question. This year, while because we have to pick some kind of time period to define the campaign, it's usually all of August and into early September.
And I think this year we had our first webinar like in May, so which is way earlier than we did last year. And we did have some preliminary discussions about trying to do something maybe in April this time, getting our toolkit pulled together and at least having an initial call with affiliate section caucus leaders to do like an initial rollout. And we kind of just ramp it up as we get closer to August and September. We pick up with like more emails. Nicole had a whole series of fact-related emails that rolled out this year with reminders and links back to new resources that we were developing. I mean, we were working on new letters to the editor and op-eds pretty much all the way up through September. So, but we are definitely looking. As I said, we did kick it off earlier this year, and we are looking to try to do that even sooner next year.
We do have some of the tools in April.
Yeah. And we do, as a part of National Public Health Week, have kind of a separate advocacy component, and oftentimes that issue tends to be public health funding because it's something you can tie to a lot of different campaigns, and it's something that we found that our membership is interested in. So there will be some advocacy component to National Public Health Week that you can tag on to that will more than likely be related to the issues that we do during the FACT campaign. So, all right. Well, I think that is all the time we have for questions for this panel, but we'll be around, so if you have additional questions, you can ask us, and I'm going to turn it back to Nicole.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. So we'll get started in about five minutes again at 9:40 with the second panel, and we'll be hearing from Becca Klein and Debbie Swanson, so affiliates and members, hearing from their experiences and their successes in advocacy.